You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
Yeah, isn't that like a sharp pointy stick to the eye first thing in the morning? Guys, I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio. Welcome to the show, everybody. A little bit of information about 2A Radio and your host, yours truly, Bill Carnes. I have been in the shooting sports since 1989, which is relatively short if you actually think about it, 21 years at this point. I got my first rifle when I was 19 years old. I was 18 years old when I got my first rifle. I still own it today, Ruger 10/22. I got my first handgun at 19 years old, and there was really no turning back after that. I took my first formal firearms training course for my 25th birthday, and I went to gun sight in Paulden, Arizona, and I finished top of my class in the handgun 250. I was the only one to shoot a perfect score on test day. It's 5.5 days. It's Monday through Friday, full days, and then a half day Saturday. I don't know if that's still the format. That's the only class I've actually taken at gunsight. However, I have been on the property other than that. And what a fantastic experience that was. From there, I went on to be a police officer for Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. I've been an NRA certified instructor for a long time, which doesn't really say much. The NRA certification is more of a piece of paper, not really an ability. I moved on to be the lead rangemaster at Front Sight, where I became one of only two guys that have ever worked there as a recognized and qualified five weapons defensive rangemaster. That's where I am qualified to rangemaster the weapon systems, handgun, shotgun, rifle, submachine gun, and precision long range sniper, counter sniper type rifle from basic into and through the advanced level. So there's a little bit of qualifications and information on me. You can always find out more at BillCarnes.com, C-A-R-N-S. There is no E in the last name. So BillCarnes.com, you can find more information on me. When it comes to the show, you can always go to 2A Radio. 2A stands for Second Amendment. The official name of the show is the Second Amendment Radio Show. We just shorten that down to 2A Radio. So you can go to 2aradio.com. Plenty of stuff on there, including all of the archives. At the end of each day, the show goes up within about 30 minutes or so, including show descriptions. Every single show since its inception back of March of 2009 is up. Now, what do we discuss here on 2A Radio? Well, the foundation is all Second Amendment related. However, that's not the only thing we speak of. We also speak about First Amendment rights and basically any rights that are out there. And usually we bring them up when some government jackass or some government entity decides to want to consider or just simply does subvert some sort of right from you, me, or anybody else out there. We talk about police and more specifically police abuses from having worked in the policing industry as a patrol officer for Las Vegas Metro. I have firsthand experience in good cops and bad cops and what they do. I speak quite often about guns, gear, tactics, techniques. If you have any questions about guns, gears, tactics, techniques, rights, anything like that, you can always email me. And my email address is bill@2aradio.com. So feel free to send me any sort of comments, questions, suggestions, whatever you like. Oftentimes, say hunting season is coming for big game. You want to sight in your rifle, get some information going on about guns, gear, bullet selection, how to sight in, where to sight in, cleaning procedures, whatever that might be. Send those things in to me, bill@2aradio.com, and I will either answer you directly or, if it's good enough and I feel that the audience would probably benefit in hearing the answer, I'll hold off and I will add it right here onto the radio show. So there's a little bit of format and formula for you when it comes to 2A Radio, yours truly as the host, and really what to expect for this next hour. Stay tuned, guys. There is plenty more to come, and you are tuned in live right here with me, Bill Carnes, hosting 2A Radio.
it's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Well, I've said it before, and I will say it again. Probably the single most embarrassing thing that Nevada claims is not that we have gaming, not that you can walk down the middle of the street with an open container, not that we have legalized prostitution and brothels, but Harry Reid. Harry Reid is the single most enveloping embarrassment in the history of the state of Nevada. State of Nevada has been around since 1865. October 31st, 1865, we achieved statehood. And I am hoping that when it comes around to our birthday, coming up this next October 31st, 2 days after that, we will celebrate by voting Harry Reid out. In yet another despicable act, Harry Reid brought up for vote yesterday in the Senate the Disclosure Act, which passed the House. And the Disclosure Act is a sheer and complete violation, total violation, of the First Amendment. What that would have done is anybody that has anything at all to do with putting out political information or campaigns would have to disclose who their contributors were, as if that really matters. Not for the politicians, but for independent groups. I mean, you have seen different things where different organizations will put out a campaign message and then say who it was. The Disclosure Act would have caused them to have to actually list who donated so that they could pay for such spots. Now, the elected officials do have to swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. However, what they do not have to do is swear to obey the Constitution of the United States. Hence, the problems that we have, and we need to change that resoundingly throughout the entire United States of America. To uphold, defend, and obey the Constitution of the United States, and if you are within a state where you would also have to claim that you will uphold and defend the Constitution of the state, it would be to obey as well. That needs to be a major retrofit in America today. Now, Harry Reid got the Disclosure Act up for a vote yesterday, on Thursday, and it was narrowly defeated. There were 98 senators there. 59 voted for the Disclosure Act. 39 voted against. You need to have 60 to prevail in the Senate. Unless, of course, Harry Reid would call for a simple majority special rules, which is what happened to pass the Obamacare late March, early April. So the Disclosure Act was defeated. About 2 months after, almost the same bill under a different name, offered by Chuck Schumer, completely anti-gun scumbag, had already been defeated. So Harry Reid tries to slide this one through. And again, I will tell you, the most dangerous time in American history is in our future. And that will be the lame duck session between the time that the Democrats lose the House and lose some seats in the Senate, as we are predicting, after the November 2nd election, and when the new members are sworn in the first week of January. There's going to be roughly 2 months. Of course, there's vacation time for Christmas and New Year's and also around Thanksgiving. But there's probably at least 4 to 5 weeks where Congress will be in session. And during that lame duck session, the Democrats will hammer everything in the world down our throats, and the Republicans will have a very difficult time trying to reverse that unless they take control of both the House and the Senate. The Senate is probably not going to go Republican. The House probably is. So if they're split, that lame duck session is going to completely hose all of us in America. If the folks here in Nevada are stupid enough to reelect Harry Reid yet again, in light of what a filthy scumbag this guy is, such a deplorable black eye on the state. As a matter of fact, we're like a, not even just a black eye, almost like a battered child we are by what Harry Reid has done for us. Harry Reid has gone so far as to say, you know, as senator for Nevada, it's his job to create jobs. Well, senator, as the most powerful senator in the entire United States Senate, if it's your job to create jobs, you can take credit for having the highest rate of unemployment of all 50 states. Most powerful guy, worst effect. It cannot be a worse separation. You failed. You're out of here. You claim to be pro-gun. However, you vote for all kinds of anti-gun people and legislation that is not directly anti-gun, but it works around that, such as the Disclosure Act, such as Obamacare. You vote for all that, you are not pro-gun. You just won't support direct anti-gun legislation. You'll just play hide the weenie, and you're just going to play around the bush, beat around the bush with it a little bit. Scumbag. Deplorable. Back to my thought. If the folks here in Nevada are just plain stupid enough to re-elect Harry Reid, then that is going to be a horrible thing for the state and a terrible thing for the country as a whole. Absolutely terrible. And if, in fact, that happens, right here as a resident of Nevada, all but homegrown, I have been here since I was 10 years old. I'm about to be 41. I moved here in 1980. April 1st, April Fool's Day 1980 is when my family moved to Nevada. And I am saying this right here for the record. If Nevada is stupid enough to reelect Harry Reid come November 2nd, then everyone else in America should boycott Nevada. Boycott Vegas. Boycott Reno. Boycott Stateline Nevada, otherwise known as Lake Tahoe. Lake Tahoe is officially in California, but Lake Tahoe, Nevada is what you call it. It's officially Stateline Nevada. That's what I am doing. I am calling for an absolute boycott of the rest of the United States coming to Nevada and spending any money whatsoever in the entertainment capital of the world of Las Vegas and in Reno if Nevada is stupid enough to reelect Harry Reid. Because Harry Reid is bad for Nevada. He is horrendous for the entire United States. The man is on the take. He's been on the take forever. You do not grow up in all of a ramshackled mud hut in the nothing burg of Searchlight, Nevada, and end up with a net worth of tens of millions of dollars when your entire professional career, with almost no exception, has been on the public payroll. It just doesn't happen unless you're dirty. And then the dirtiness might be completely legal. Such is the case if you donate to somebody's campaign reelection fund when they're in Congress, but be it the House or the Senate. And let's say that Harry Reid has collected $30 million or $25 million, whatever it is, for his reelection campaign. But he spends only $10 million of it. Guess what happens to the balance? He has the option to keep it personally. Just cut himself a check out of the campaign fund account and close it out. That's his option. There's a lot of laws like that. You can steal from the campaign contribution. All you have to do is follow the law that you and your buddies passed several years ago, or your predecessors, the other stinking filthy, corrupt SOBs that occupied Washington, D.C. in yesteryear, passed some time ago. You can keep all kinds of money out of your campaign fund. You just need to have proper accounting procedures to show where it goes. As long as it goes within the law that they passed to benefit themselves, then no big deal. On top of that, even if you serve only a single two-year term in the House or a single six-year term in the Senate, after that term, you get to keep that same paycheck coming for the rest of your life, including high-end, completely paid-for medical care. How about that? Obamacare does not affect those in the legislature in D.C. It doesn't affect those high up in the executive or judicial branch either. They get their own program because Obamacare isn't good enough for them. They got to have their own stuff. And who pays for that? You and I. Well, we have a couple of guests coming up. In the next segment, we will have Justin Campbell in here live for RonanTactical.com. We're going to talk a little bit about them. And then coming in the following segment, we're going to have Jim Dunsing calling in about the report of what happened at yesterday's coroner's inquest of the Eric Scott homicide by police case. Stay tuned. Plenty more to come. We're live right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back from the break, everyone. I have a guest in studio today. A guest, he's been a good friend of mine for, what, probably 5 or 6 years now, somewhere around there, I'm guessing.
At least six.
Justin Campbell. Justin is in here representing RonanTactical.com. And Ronan Tactical is a new company that has been put together by several, actually organized by several people. One really is kind of the head. And we're talking about some pretty high-end and very well-certified firearms instructors who are bringing concealed weapons training and concealed weapon permits from around the country to you, wherever you happen to live. Am I right?
That's absolutely correct.
So tell us just a little bit about I know that the whole thing has to do with the movement of people being able to get guns and being able to pack and travel and, have what's called reciprocity or even recognition of a concealed weapons permit from one state to the next. Tell us a little bit about how Ronan Tactical works out, Justin.
All right. The key thing about Ronan Tactical is we bring the class to you. So you don't have to worry about traveling somewhere to take your class. The certified instructors will come to you and deliver the class at your location. If there needs to be some shooting for the certain state's requirements, we just need to make sure we have a range set up.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, and I understand that, undoubtedly, the two very best states to get concealed weapons permits from, whether you live there or not, would be Utah and Florida, because so many other states recognize Utah and Florida, with like 30, 32 states, something like that?
It's about 32 right now.
Yeah. So if you have a Utah concealed weapons permit, you might be able to carry in the state that you're in. But even if you don't, if you leave and travel around, say you travel for business, family, pleasure, whatever it might be, if you travel, say you live in Michigan and you want to travel down to Arizona, Nevada, Utah area, Colorado, maybe around there, it's very likely that those states will recognize either Utah or Florida or both. So you can pack having an out-of-state permit, even if you don't live in Utah or Florida.
That's correct.
Good. Well, that rocks. And I have a Utah permit. It wasn't so much for that. When I got my Utah permit, that was actually the year I was contracting for Department of Defense in Utah, and I got my Utah permit then, and it just worked out. Then after that, it really started to flourish, and if you've got a Utah permit, you can carry in like 30-plus states.
It's an outstanding permit. And the nice thing about Utah and Florida, we don't have to have a shooting range available. It's a safe gun handling requirement. And so we'll go over the safe gun handling in the classroom. We don't need to actually go out and fire rounds.
Really? Okay. So you don't actually have to have a range to call Ronan Tactical and bring you guys out.
Right. You can just call us out at a location where we can host a class for a classroom.
Okay. So you need some sort of a classroom. You got to have a host. And then they put together what people will bring in, friends, family, coworkers, whatever it is, and have X number of people that want to take this class, something that would probably make it, good enough, financially good enough for everybody involved so you guys can come out and actually cover your costs and do your class and such as that.
Absolutely. We even pay a commission for people that set up classes for us.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so if you wanted to host a class and you put together 15 or 20 people, we'll pay you a commission.
Me as the organizer.
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes, sir.
All right. Cool. Now, I would imagine if you're paying commission, then, like, say I'm the one who's organizing and I get 25, 30 people that I know together. And let's say I live in Kansas. We want to get a Utah and Florida CCWs, right? So you guys will come out and give that class to 25, 30 people I set up, whatever, 15, 20, whatever it is. And I get a percentage for everybody that comes in, whatever the rate is. Do you have a set rate, or is it really based on your costs of actually going out there and running these courses?
It's going to be based off of travel. If we're going to have to travel, say, to Kansas.
Okay.
For airfare and hotel as well.
Okay. So if it's a more expensive place to travel to and stay, the price goes up a little. If it's a place a little bit less, then they say. So you guys are really out there marketing based on what your actual costs of doing business is.
Yes.
That's good. Well, you can't get any better than that.
No. And if you live in a state and we don't have a certification to give you a CCW in that state, we'll research and become licensed if possible. So that way we can actually offer that state's CCW as well.
Okay, so let's go back to Kansas again. So you might look to see if you could be a Kansas CCW instructor as well as bringing Utah and Florida so somebody could carry in Kansas plus another 30-plus states. And they don't have to travel to Utah or Florida or anywhere else, and you guys can come in and do all of that right then and there.
Absolutely.
Well, now that rocks.
Absolutely.
All right. So have you done some courses already?
Yes, we've had courses in Seattle, California, Arizona.
Good. All right, so you're already getting it done.
Yes.
Now, what if I want to shoot? Can we go out and do some shooting if we get a range together?
Absolutely.
Good. All right, so is it just CCW-related stuff? I mean, are we going to be carrying from concealment or is it up to the class, like whoever organizes it, what kind of shooting we can do, or how does that work?
We can adapt it to what the user needs. But we'll do some concealment work, some basic tactical survival-type shooting, what you might encounter in a CCW world.
Okay, so out on the street, actually packing concealed, and we can roll it down. That's RoninTactical.com. Is that correct? Ronin, R-O-N-I-N, Tactical.com.
That's correct.
Great. All right, man. I appreciate it. And you actually happen to be a certified handgun combat master, too, don't you?
Number 43.
Number 43, Chuck Taylor. All right, so we don't have to worry about slouches coming out there and just a bunch of wannabe CCW geeks. We actually have some real-life pros.
Real-life pros, tactical experience.
Excellent. Justin, I appreciate it. You're also a veteran, aren't you?
I am.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Guys, stay tuned. There's plenty more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and you're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
And welcome back, guys. As promised, yesterday we spent the entire show with Jim Dunsing on the line. Jim Dunsing is a professional firearms instructor, which is how I met him. He's an attorney. I've used him privately as an attorney. And he's also a victim of having been shot by Las Vegas Metro just about 11 months ago because a cop didn't want to have the conversation that Jim wanted to have with him. So he tased Jim. Jim ran due to a heart condition. The cop didn't like it, so he gunned him down and shot him three times. Jim has been live in the coroner's inquest hearing looking into the police-involved homicide of Eric Scott. So, as we understand, yesterday we did the entire show on what happened on day one. We're going to do just a recap of what happened on day two. So, Jim, thanks again for calling in today.
My pleasure, Bill.
So, tell us a little bit about what happened today. We had a little bit more interesting day in the courtroom.
Yeah, yesterday we had to sit through just pain medication discussions. Today, they started with a fellow whose dog had bit Eric Scott about 10 months prior to this incident.
A dog? A guy whose dog bit Eric Scott 10 months ago?
Yeah, apparently he lives in the same neighborhood as Eric.
And somehow this relates to why the cop shot him, because a dog bit him 10 months ago?
Well, Eric pulled a gun on the dog, according to this fellow who didn't file a report on the incident until after his dog was impounded.
Okay. Well, did Eric Scott shoot this man's dog?
No.
Okay. Well, I can tell you from personal experience, I had a dog attack me, and I shot it. So for him not to shoot the dog actually shows quite a bit of restraint in my book. But interesting. So what they're doing is they're, again, rather than trying to find the truth, they're trying to paint Eric Scott in a bad light. So regardless of what happened in those 5 seconds from the time Eric Scott left the store and the police gunned him down, they're trying to make it appear as though the cop did everybody a favor by shooting some scumbag. That seems to be the picture that they're painting.
I think you got it perfectly.
So
then they called a Secret Service agent who tried to recover data from a hard drive that should have recorded the video images at the Costco.
Okay, so and I'm going to repeat a little bit because your phone connection's a little rough. I know you're down at the courthouse and it's rough down there. But so what you're saying is there was a video camera that was outside that would have recorded this, but they are claiming that there was some hard drive issue. So a Secret Service agent who inspected the hard drive testified, correct?
Correct.
And what was his testimony? What was his bottom line?
He had no information. He was able to say that some of the drive was damaged and some of it was not.
But did he say what was on there? Did you guys get to see any actual video?
He didn't actually examine that.
He didn't examine any video?
No.
He only examined a hard drive? Huh. Interesting.
Then they called a Seagate employee.
Seagate. That must have been a Seagate hard drive, I'm guessing.
Exactly. She was able to find what images they were able to find. Here's what they have of the video. The shooting happened on July 10th. On July 8th, at 13:15 or so, the video, for some reason, stops.
Okay, like 1:15 in the afternoon.
Right.
Okay.
The video is then out. Shy Meyerly happens to, it's not his job, but he happens to notice that the video is out, takes it upon himself to call the technician.
This is somebody who worked at, somebody who worked at Costco noticed that the video was out, so he calls a technician.
Right.
Okay.
They say they're normal guys, not in until Monday, and they'll be there first thing Monday.
Okay, so the video was going to be out from Thursday through whenever it was fixed on Monday, and that just happened to be when Eric Scott was killed right in between that.
Right.
And it also happened to be in view of this camera, am I guessing?
Yeah, the camera had an absolutely perfect picture of what would happen. If the camera images were there, it would show on the right-hand part of the screen the shooter, in the middle part of the screen Eric Scott looking at the shooter. It would show whatever was in his hands, whatever happened before that, and it would show the two officers behind him on the far left part of the screen.
Okay, so it would have been the absolute perfect video evidence of what actually transpired between Eric Scott and the cops who shot him and the shooting itself.
Correct. Here's what's strange. There was only one person that worked on the video system between them. And all he did was turn it on and off. And then it worked. At 5:30 on July 10th, they had images of the cones at the crime scene.
So, wait a minute. You're telling me that it stopped working on Thursday, and it didn't work at all until somebody turned the equipment off and turned it back on a couple hours after Eric Scott was shot?
That's what I'm telling you. Well, that's what they told us.
That's absolutely an amazing story. So someone noticed on Thursday that the video recorder wasn't working, called Seagate. Seagate said, we'll have somebody out on Monday. Then Eric Schott is killed by police.
The technical company that typically services those types of video surveillance systems.
Okay, so it wasn't a Seagate employee. It was just somebody who actually services computers along that line. Okay, so someone notices that that isn't working on Thursday. Not the normal person who runs the system, but someone else. They call for a service call. They say, we'll be out on Monday. Saturday afternoon, Eric Scott is shot and killed by police. And the very video camera that is affected, is this the only video camera that was affected? Or were there others that were affected by this system?
That's not exactly clear. Some were working, some were not.
Okay, so we know that this one was not.
By which hard drive or something was affected.
Okay, and then after Eric Scott was shot, somebody in the security office turned that system off, turned it back on, and then it was magically working. Is that what we're hearing?
Exactly.
That is unbelievable. As a matter of fact, it's so hard to swallow this pill. I don't know if Joseph Goebbels himself could sell this one, but the district attorney's office is trying to sell this one, correct?
Well, there's a couple more coincidences, I'm afraid, though.
Oh, interesting. Okay, please do share.
The guy shot him Meyerly.
I'm sorry, say that again. Your connection broke up again. Say it again.
I'm sorry. Shai Meyerly.
Shai Meyerly, someone's name, okay.
Right, he's the guy who noticed the video and took it upon himself to do the scheduling, even though he'd never done that stuff before.
Okay. This is an employee at Costco, I take it.
Correct. He was also the employee that made the 911 call.
Okay, so he was the one on the phone with the 911 operator.
Correct.
Okay.
They also don't have any video of inside the store of what happened.
Oh, okay. Excellent. So they have no video of this at all.
I'm sorry?
They allege they have no video of this whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
Okay.
The Shai Meyerly apparently sees Eric Scott in one of the aisles opening up packages of what seem to be water bottle coolers and whatnot and trying to fit a couple of them together and see what worked.
Right.
He then notices that Eric has a gun.
Now, not a gun in his hand, but a gun in a holster somewhere.
Correct. He was carrying it concealed, and apparently it showed under his T-shirt or something.
Right, which at this point in time, first of all, carrying a gun even exposed in Nevada is no violation of crime whatsoever. And if he's carrying concealed, then, and he has a concealed weapons permit, which he did, no crime. But if you're carrying concealed and you can then see the gun or see the holster, you're violating a provision of your concealed carry permit, which is not a crime, but it is something where you could potentially have your CCW revoked by the county sheriff's office. But at this point in time, no.
Your Second Amendment.
Exactly. But still, at this point in time, we don't have any crime actually having been committed when it comes to him having a gun.
Right, and Eric said something about him being former military and having a constitutional right to have a gun. And actually, they used the term Green Beret, which I'm told is friends and family, he would have never said Green Beret.
Yeah, and I doubt he ever would have either. Most people who have served honorably in the military would never lie about their service. It's only the people who wish they had done more and probably didn't have too many friends on the service in the first place that would actually lie about it. I actually finally met somebody who was not Special Forces ever since the Operation Iraqi Freedom, someone who actually worked logistics. Most everybody you meet nowadays, everybody was former Special Forces until you actually look into their background. But Eric Scott, nothing about him seems that he would have lied. I mean, he had a distinguished career as it was in tanks anyhow. So carry on.
Yeah, West Point grad isn't something normal you have to skirt around.
Exactly. And you and I both happen to know a guy. He and his wife used to come out and train at the facility we worked at, who is a lieutenant colonel now. They live up in Northern California, and he is a lieutenant colonel in the intel area for the United States Army. And he was a West Point graduate, and he wore his ring, and you'd almost have to drag it out of him that he even went to West Point. Anyhow, back to this whole thing with Eric Scott. They're claiming that he says he was a Green Beret, which was certainly not true, and why would anybody bring that up?
Right, but because he's, frankly, because he had a concealed weapon, the police were called.
Exactly, that's what it sounds like.
Well, that's what he testified to, basically. He said we talked to him, then we noticed he had a gun. Once we noticed he had a gun, it's our policy to call the cops.
That's a store policy, not because the law has been broken, but because someone's exercising their rights. I wonder if he was standing there having a conversation about how he enjoyed or didn't enjoy the politics of, say, I don't know, Ron Paul, that if they would have called the cops then for exercising his constitutional right as well. I'm imagining probably not.
Let's hope not. But, They call the cops, and the cops show up, guns drawn, and start yelling orders, and then shots are fired, and there it goes down. So Shy testified that he was walking out of the store behind Eric. He had made the call to 911 and was told him that he was suspected of shoplifting, which is not something he ever alleged in his testimony today.
It also didn't sound... Now, I haven't heard the 911 tape, but I have heard the radio traffic that went out over the air between dispatch and all of the police in the area, and nothing on that audio tape alleged anything to do with suspected shoplifting either.
Right.
Now, but did you guys actually get to hear the 911 tape?
Well, we heard, yes. We heard the 911 call between Shy and dispatch or whoever he got transferred around to by the time we were listening.
Okay. And how was his voice and what were the things he was saying? Did it sound as though he was playing this event up to justify his rationale for calling the police and trying to get them to the Costco? Or did it seem as though it was rational and straightforward?
You know, his demeanor seemed very, very calm, and he seemed to be a largely rational person. He wasn't your typical hopeful who was just crazily scared that they saw a gun and, oh my God, I'm scared. He was very, very calm and talked to the, basically seemed like he was trying to talk dispatch into getting the police there.
Right, but it didn't sound as, did it sound like he was inflating the story at all, or was it straight down the road?
It definitely sounds like he was inflating the story because he said suspected shoplifting on the call. And they went through in very explicit detail everything Eric was doing, and it was not shoplifting.
So it sounds like the typical thing. What most people do when they call the police is they will try to inflate what's going on just to get the cops there and get them faster so that they're not blown off. Because they believe that if they're calling 911, the cops need to show up. So we're going to do what we can to get them there quicker. And it sounds like this was no exception to that rule, that this guy who was making the 911 call was inflating whatever happened to be going on just to get the cops there. That's what it sounds like from what you're telling me.
Correct.
Interesting.
And then at some point in here, he notices that the store is being evacuated. He didn't make that decision. Somebody else made that decision, one of his supervisors.
Actually, and I believe that decision came from the police from having listened to the radio traffic before.
It seems to have been either through the police to his supervisor or a joint decision of those two.
Understood. Okay.
And as they're exiting, he's watching, during this phone call, he's watching Eric Scott. He's apparently in eyesight. He's got a shot, he's walking around the store, you know, kind of laughing off the incident. And then they got, it followed him out. So I see him leaving the store with his girlfriend.
Did they see Eric leaving the store with the girlfriend? This guy who made the call is following Eric Scott and his girlfriend as they're leaving the store. We have about a minute left, Jim.
Okay. He then points out at the guy to one of the officers who's the shooter. He then yells, "Get on the ground," and Eric is shot.
Now,
the testimony by the... Go ahead.
As I understand, there were three different cops, and I heard through witnesses that they all shouted a different command. Did that come out today?
On the audio, we were able to make out "get on the ground" quite well. Drop it, get on the ground, get on the ground, and then shots fire.
Gotcha. All right, Jim, stay on the line. We're going to hold on through the break and get right back to you. Folks, stay tuned. You're listening to Bill Carnes with Jim Dunsing right here on 2A Radio. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
All right, guys, welcome back. We still have Jim Dunsing on the line. Jim, we got about 3 minutes to polish this up before the end of the show, before we conclude Two-Way Radio for the week. So please carry on. We were, as we left the last segment, we were talking about the 911, the person who called 911 following Eric Scott and his girlfriend out of the store and showed to the cops, this is the guy, and you heard clearly on the 911 audio tape, because he was still on the phone, you heard clearly officers shout, get on the ground.
Correct. And since we only got a couple minutes, let's get right to the key points here. Shy was walking right out the door. He testified he's about 1 foot outside the door. Eric is about 3 feet outside the door when he's shot. Yesterday, the last witness, Colleen Kohlberg, testified she was right at the door entrance when he got shot. Neither saw each other there. She ran back in the building. But all of it was essentially this. They yelled at him, he pulled the gun, pointed at the cop, and was shot.
Now, that's what both Shy and the lady from yesterday testified to, correct?
Correct, and the shooter. And then they got his holster, apparently was a clip-on 1911 holster, where the holster clips to a little deal that's attached to the stock, and that slides into the back of your pants.
Oh, okay, so it's a clip that goes onto the stock and goes into the pants, so it's not really a holster itself, it's something that you adapt onto the stock of the gun, the grip panel of the gun, so it stays secure in your pants, correct?
Right, and they didn't mention, and I think they might have, they didn't mention that the gun was registered to Eric. And normally we're allowed to ask the questions from the jury and from the family members. They stopped testimony today. And the judge asked his questions, and after the family had submitted their written questions, we took a break. We're going to come back tomorrow. The judge will have gone through the questions, and we'll ask them in the morning.
Now, didn't that happen today or yesterday as well, that after the first day, someone's testimony ended, and the judge had all night to review the family's questions before this yesterday morning started again?
Colleen Kohlberg ended the day, and she was asked all the questions, and then they broke.
Okay, so today was, or yesterday was a little bit different story. They finished with testimony, but yet they didn't take the time to ask the family's questions.
They did ask the family's questions, and that concluded her questioning.
Okay, I got you. All right, well, it'll be interesting to find out what happens on Monday, Jim. You'll be there again today, Friday, correct?
Correct. Great. And possibly Saturday.
All right, well, Jim, we look forward to it. Thanks very much for calling in. Guys, you're going to hear a little bit more about this each day until this circus of an inquest process comes to an end.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2WayRadio.com.